A Calgary father who's been fighting for his daughter's life, a daughter that is seeking doctor-assisted murder because of her mental health, has been told by a judge that his daughter should be able to legally kill herself. We're going to discuss this with Tabitha Ewart, a Christian lawyer and a friend of the show. We'll also see that this aggressive leaning into killing innocent people before their natural death has swept over the whole world, and a vile normalization campaign is underway in the West. Jesus was crystal clear in John chapter 8 when he was teaching about what it means to be dead in sin and a slave to Christ. If Satan is your master, you do what your master does, and he is a liar and a murderer from the beginning. A love affair with death is evidence of a person or culture that is totally enslaved to Satan. It is therefore exceedingly urgent that we be people who speak and promote life. It's April 4th. I'm Andrew DiBartolo. That's Matt Halleck, and this is Liberty Dispatch.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. We are so thankful that you have joined us yet again on the program. As always, our show is produced by Liberty Coalition Canada in partnership with Christian Week. LCC exists to establish Christ's justice and righteousness and to defend those who stand. And Christian Week exists to provide a practical, balanced, hope-filled perspective on national and global issues. As always, if you do value our shows, we ask that you would donate to Liberty Coalition Canada and all that we're doing over at libertycoalitioncanada.com. You can scan that helpful QR code at the bottom of the page to go directly there on your smartphone devices, libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate to help support us as we continue to do the many works that we are about doing. Andrew, good to see you again. We're post-Resurrection Sunday. I'm still celebrating, as you can see, where Death wears wearing this wonderful missional wear shirt that says, "Death, where is thy sting?" So we get to obviously taunt death in the face of the resurrection of Christ, just as Paul does in 1 Corinthians 15. So had a wonderful Easter weekend. I hope the same for you. What do you got for our listeners for the mailbag question of the week? That's mailbag at libertycoalitioncanada.com.
In lieu of a mailbag question proper, obviously people can send in any questions or concerns or criticisms to mailbag@libertycoalitioncanada.com. We just want to remind everyone that we are about 2.5 weeks away from our first location for our Politics in the Pulpit conference. We're about 2.5 weeks away from being in Weston, Nova Scotia on April the 20th. Registration looks pretty good. I think the max was around 175 or maybe 200 people. So far, registration is about 110, 120. So you still have 2.5 weeks to get out to Weston, Nova Scotia. We're also going to be at Ingersoll, Ontario, May the 4th, and New Westminster, British Columbia on May 25th. Head over to libertycoalitioncanada.com/politics-in-the-pulpit. Register today. Come out to one of the locations. You're not going to want to miss this. We're going to have vendors such as the Christian Heritage Party, Action for Canada, the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, and the Ezra Institute, with resources and opportunities to get involved. So head to the website, register for one of the three locations today. The cutoff for registration for Weston, Nova Scotia is Tuesday, April the 16th. That is the last day you can register, because Wednesday morning we have to submit numbers so we make sure we have enough food. So make sure you sign up for the conference. That's an exciting bit. There's another exciting bit. We actually have a brand new sponsor here with Liberty Coalition Canada on the Dispatch, and that new sponsor, solid brothers and sisters in Christ who own this company, who are behind the organization. This is Pro Fleet Care. So the past couple of years have been some of the most uncertain times for employment and business in Canadian history. Have you ever considered owning a business where you can be passionate about your work and make a good living by helping others, but you're worried that you might fail or that you have to create something from scratch all on your own. Well, Pro Fleet Care is a franchise organization that is dedicated to helping people find financial freedom and take control of their livelihood through good workmanship and honest business practices. With a 40-year proven business model, ProFleet Care is a unique and comparatively low startup cost business in the growing rust protection industry. There's a low initial investment, low overhead costs, good margins, training and business mentorship, and an established brand. Are there some of the benefits that come with joining ProFleet Care? So if you're interested, you want to start a business, you want to be your own boss, you want the flexible hours, you want the hard work payoff that comes from this, and you're interested in joining ProFleet Care's franchise organization, you can go to profleetcare.com. That's ProFleetCare.com. Or you can call my good friend Greg Laurie, not Greg Laurie, the Billy Graham pastor that's kind of gone squishy in the last few years. Greg Laurie, L-A-W-R-I-E, you can call him at 905-741-5316. That's 905-741-5316. That's Greg Laurie at Pro Fleet Care. Again, profleetcare.com. He's a solid brother committed to honoring Christ in his business.
Amen.
And legitimately helping other entrepreneurially minded Christians who want to start a business, be their own boss, but do so within an existing brand in a high profit margin kind of industry. So if that's you, if you're interested in something like that, you got to connect with our friends over at Pro Fleet Care.
Absolutely. And if you are a friend of the show and you want to advertise with us, be sure to reach out to us again at mailbag@libertycoalitioncanada.com to join the team. The growing team of sponsors that we have here that help us continue to produce shows for our listeners. And we're so thankful for men and women like Greg. We really, 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 really appreciate the support. And we hope that you guys will contact him today. So very excited for that.
So Matt, our audience might recall that not too long ago, we covered a story about a 27-year-old Calgary woman who wanted to kill herself via doctor-assisted murder. Mm-hmm. And she was scheduled to do so on February 1st of this year, but her father filed an injunction to have it delayed and in the hopes it would be stopped because he was arguing that she was unfit to make this decision. She's on the autism spectrum, depression as well, as making it so that she is not of sound mind to take her own life, which is the ultimate in permanent decisions. So this is how we justified his claim for the injunction. And his daughter has been identified in all court documents as WV. So we covered this just about a week and a half ago. So on March 25th, which is just 1 week ago on Monday, the Calgary Court of King's Bench Justice Colin Feasby ruled that the injunction ordering her to not end her life be lifted, and that she should be allowed, as a tribal issue, to move. She should be allowed to legally kill herself. So his decision has been stayed for 30 days because, as the justice has said, he anticipates that the father will appeal the decision, appeal the injunction. This is how the justice justified his position in his decision. Quote, "The harm to MV, if an injunction is granted, goes to the core of her being." So, sorry, it's MV is how she's recognized in the court documents, not WV. "The harm to MV, if an injunction is granted, goes to the core of her being. An injunction would deny MV the right to choose between living or dying with dignity. Further, an injunction would put MV in a position where she would be forced to choose between living a life she has decided is intolerable and ending her life without medical assistance. This is a terrible choice that should not be forced on MV, as attempting to end her life without medical assistance would put her at increased risk of pain, suffering, and lasting injury." Close quote. The justice also offered what, given his decision, I think ultimately amounts to rather empty and hollow platitudes to Envy's parents, considering that he said, yeah, I mean, a doctor should be allowed to kill this 27-year-old. This is what he said, quote, "The pain of losing a child, even an adult child, is not something that any parent should experience. They have devoted their lives to raising MV from birth and have continued to support her since she has come of age. They will understandably be devastated by her death. For many parents, the loss of a child is a life-changing event that they never truly recover from. The loss is immeasurable." Close quote. I mean, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
What he's saying is true.
Mm-hmm.
But he's saying that as he's saying she should still legally be allowed to kill herself.
Yeah, yeah. Man, it is a tragic case. But Justice Feasy goes on.
Storyline. Let's misprint. Fees B. No,
Fees
sounds like feces.
Yeah.
Justice Feasies.
yeah.
Might as well. All right, sorry. We'll have to edit that.
Yeah, no worries. Justice Feasby, anticipating that MV might change her mind during the next 30 days, had this to say directly to MV. Quote, "What I know of your journey through the healthcare system from the evidence in this case suggests that you have struggled to find a doctor who could diagnose your condition and offer you appropriate treatment. I do not know why you seek MAID. Your reasons remain your own because I have respected your autonomy and your privacy. My decision recognizes your right to choose medically assisted death, but it does not require you to choose death." Federal Health Minister Mark Holland, that big-headed freak, said this on Monday in response to the reporters about the inevitability of the mental health reasons being a justification of doctor-assisted murder, which they're trying to make happen. "Is your intention to still move ahead with MAID for mental illness just within a longer time frame?" a reporter asked him. "That's correct," Holland replied at a news conference. "There are people who have had for decades been trapped in mental torture, being in a horrific situation where they have tried everything and exhausted all avenues and under their own recognizance are saying that they want to access MAID," he continued. "What we're saying is that in order for someone in this intractable situation, that inevitably they should have the right to, but the system needs to be ready and the system needs to get it right," Holland continued. Commenting on this entire situation, LifeSite News concluded their article with this poignant point. The most recent reports show that MAID is the sixth highest cause of death in Canada. However, it was not listed as such in Statistics Canada's top 10 leading causes of death from 2019 through to 2022. When asked why MAID was left off the list, the agency explained that it records the illnesses that led Canadians to choose to end their lives via euthanasia. Not the actual cause of death as the primary cause of death. Andrew, how absurd is that?
Well, if I could say quickly, it's not that absurd considering the actual number one cause of death in Canada is the murder of preborn babies, which clearly is not put on Statistics Canada's list. Technically, doctor-assisted suicide would be number seven because number one is murdering preborn babies. But the fact that they don't recognize that is the reason why they have this absurdity, or the same reason why if you had a heart attack and then shot yourself in the head but tested positive for COVID, it was a COVID death. It's all wrapped up in the same kind of thinking.
So what you're saying is they're used to fudging the numbers when it comes to death statistics in Canada.
Well, it's narrative crafting. No one wants to say, hey, we murder more babies than any other cause of death, and no one wants to say that the sixth leading cause of death is people killing themselves with legal approval of and involvement of a doctor. That doesn't play well. So yeah. Let's do
and,
the other
and I mean, it, so it's a really good point, because what we're saying with both MAID, which is, keep in mind, it's supposed to expand. That's what we're talking about with Mark Holland. And abortion, by far and away, the leading cause of death in our society is state-sanctioned murdered. Mm-hmm. By far. That's where we are state, at in our culture of death.
State-sanctioned, taxpayer-funded
yes. murder. Don't forget that point.
The because, levels of evil, mm-hmm. it's an onion.
Well,
it just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper how evil and vile it is that they steal from us
yeah.
in order to legally murder people,
yeah.
including the and a lot of these people with mental illness or mm-hmm. a lot of these people who are situationally depressed or a lot of these people who have, you know, chronic pain. These people, along with and this is the wickedness, the demonic nature of the health establishment. That mm-hmm. these people, along with the preborn babies, are the most vulnerable
yeah.
and the least able to advocate for themselves well. And a society that prides itself on caring for the oppressed is actually the most violent and bloodthirsty toward those who are in greatest need of protection and representation. It is satanic hypocrisy
yeah.
to the highest extent.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it cuts to the core of this issue, right? Because when we're talking about MV, we're talking about a person who doesn't really have terminal serious health issues, but actually has more mental health issues. And her father is speaking up because he is trying to prevent his emotionally vulnerable daughter from making a life-ending decision, as a good father should do, right? He's trying to care for her, not usher in her death, because it turns out that is not dignified, no matter what mm-hmm. adjectives you place before it. Anyways, continuing on, according to Health Canada, in 2022, 13,241 Canadians died by MAID, which is lethal injection therefrom. This accounted for 4.1% of all deaths in the country for this year, a 31.2% increase from 2021. While the numbers for 2023 have yet to be released, all indications point to the situation growing even more grim than the previous year. And it turns out that what you subsidize, Andrew, you get more of. It's an unbreakable yep. economic principle. And as we subsidize the doctor-assisted murder, as you've rightfully called it, we're going to get more of it and more of it and more of it. And it's
and when you
truly,
make it more accessible,
truly
right?
Yeah. Oh,
you make
for
it
sure.
easier. You remove the barriers. It will.
And then you also remove the stigma, the social stigma of it. And you yeah. say, broadly speaking, this is morally permissible. Now, we have to understand, nobody speaking, you know, objectively from, you know, a biblical perspective, nobody has the right to take their own life. That is not a morally permissible act to do.
Because it's not your own life. We need to just sub point.
Yes.
Because it's not your own life.
Yes, exactly.
You are stewarding the life that God has given you. He owns it. So even when you murder yourself, you are taking an innocent life that technically doesn't belong to you in the first place.
Yes.
And that worldview allows us to see this much clearer mm-hmm. than pagans who think it's my life, it's my choice, I can do what I want, because they reject God.
And that's so this is going to sound radical, right? That notion even sounds radical to political conservatives in Canada, because political conservatives in Canada are still secular, warmed over secular humanists who see the arche point in a society being the isolated individual. It's not biblically speaking. It's absolutely not. And the choice inevitably... You cannot get, it's an inescapable choice. Are you going to have theonomy, God's law, as the ruler in a society, or are you going to have autonomy? And the biblical point here, that it gets to the core of what even it means, the fall, right? It gets to the core of the fall. Autonomy leads to death. Mm-hmm. When we choose autonomy, we choose to die. And now we're seeing that actually play out. It has a body count. And I mean, it ultimately has every single death for no matter what the reason, if we want to trace back to original sin. But we're seeing this inevitable principle that proves, again, Christian doctrine is true, playing out in our society. So again, we have to put it to our listeners. Is it theonomy? Or autonomy? Is it Christ?
This, by the way, I don't know if you've seen this recently, but have you seen this video of Richard Dawkins making the rounds?
Oh, dude.
So here you have, I mean, for anyone who hasn't, I'll just give a quick analysis, and we have some more comments about this that we're going to save to a little bit later on in the show. We're bringing on a friend very shortly to talk about this as well. Mm-hmm. But Richard Dawkins, for any of you who don't know, he was known kind of warmly as one of the four horsemen of the new atheism. So yeah. Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, Sam Harris, and Christopher Hitchens. Christopher Hitchens has passed away. Daniel Dennett, when he passed away, was replaced by Lawrence Krauss. So you kind of have the four horsemen of the new atheism. And new atheism is more of a militant form of, we hate Christianity, we hate theism, and we want people to stop believing it, stop being a Christian, mock Christians. And now Richard Dawkins, realizing what happens when you import Islam wholesale into Western culture, and when you see secular humanism, you know, produce fruit, now you have Richard Dawkins saying, I'm a cultural Christian, so I deny all the tenets of the Christian faith, but I totally approve of a culture grounded on biblical principles. And what he's basically saying is, I love the food, but I hate the chef who made it. Yeah, or the meme is, he's sitting on a branch, and now he's cutting off the limb that he's sitting on, realizing, I don't like the limb, but he's taking his entire grounding from under him. But even the most ardent anti-Christian pagan, even when he pressed enough, realizes that the law of God is better.
Yeah, even no, absolutely well said. And that's the thing. Like, we live in a cut flower society, right? I think Doug Wilson said that quite often, and it's a great analogy, right? Because cut flowers look beautiful and live, especially if well cared for, potentially for weeks, even maybe a month if you have really nice flowers. But eventually, because they're cut from the root, the source of the life, they die and wither away. That is what we're experiencing. Secular humanism was the cutting of the Christian root of society. And though the facade of the West has lasted for, you know, nigh on a century since that really took place, we're seeing that it's shriveling and it's shriveling quick. Because what we have to understand is, what produces Christian culture is Christian cultus. It's Christian worship. And you, if you want, as you said, if you want Christian culture, you need the Christ that redeems man and restores him to his cultural task in faithfulness to God, as a faithful vicegerent under him, under his authority. That's what you need. It's Christ or chaos, friends. And you've got to choose.
Dawkins probably foolishly believes that a world exists where you can actually have Christian principles producing a moral society where maybe there was no actual Christian belief. He probably thinks that in some way humans would have been capable of stumbling upon the same kind of system and the same kind of rights. even if there were no such thing as biblical Christianity. And he thinks that because his foolish heart is darkened and he claims to be wise, he's a fool, Romans 1.
Yeah.
But that's the madness of it. So lots more to say. But before we move on, in the wake of COVID, of the COVID forever, and next week we're actually going to be talking about some even more studies coming out about the jabs. This thing won't go away. It feels like, we're in the clear. The worst is behind us. It's all over. But if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, and as long as you're not taking a steady diet of CBCOs and global flakes, right, then you'll know that the global elites and most governments do not plan on giving up their attack on our freedoms anytime soon. So you should use this time of relative peace to make long-term plans to protect your family's wealth, regardless of what may come next. Call our friends at RockLink and get your investments working for you and for the kingdom. You can reach them at 905-631-5462 or email them at info@rocklink.com. That's link with a C, info@rocklink.com. So to discuss this decision with us, to help give some understanding and really to kind of color in what's going on and how we're supposed to approach it and respond to it, is our friend Tabitha Ewart. Tabitha is a practicing lawyer in BC, obtaining her law degree from UBC. She has a history of charter litigation, policy work, and lobbying in Ottawa, which is where I first met her. She comes from a lens that we are created as individuals, but from our earliest moments to the end of life, we exist in and because of community. Tabitha, thanks so much for joining us on The Dispatch.
Thanks so much for having me today.
Super good to talk to you again.
So we are discussing this recent decision from Justice Feasby regarding MV, the 27-year-old woman in Calgary, who he says now should be allowed to legally kill herself despite her father's objections. He's overturning the injunction filed by her father. And so looking at his justification, we've examined some of his words as he speaks both to her father, both to MV herself in discussing this, addressing the lawyer's arguments, some of the charter arguments they brought forth. The question that I wanted to ask you, Tabitha, is how is it, I guess we don't know the hearts and minds of people, but how is it that this justice could justify this decision, right? What is he drawing from in order to do so? How is he concluding that in order for this woman to indeed be able to pursue life, liberty, freedom, the security of her person, this means she needs to be able to kill herself? How is he connecting those dots?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's really important to realize that this doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? This is part of a series of events that gets us to there, you know, starting with the Supreme Court decision in Carter, which said that there was the total prohibition on assisted suicide was unconstitutional, then goes to the legislature and they pass legislation around, okay, so how is it that people can have assisted suicide? And what kind of all kind of culminates here, because the judge in this case says, well, I actually can't review the doctor's decisions. And he says that because the legislature told him there is no review for the doctor's decision. So the fact that two doctors, well, there was actually four different doctors involved in this case, but the fact that she has two doctors saying that she's eligible for assisted suicide, he says, I just have to accept that. And then he kind of goes on and says, okay, there is a justiciable issue. There is an issue that should go to trial about whether they actually followed the policies and the provision in the criminal code that says that they must be, the doctors must be independent. But he says, but Carter, that Supreme Court decision says autonomy of person. So we're going to say the balance goes to her making the choice rather than actually hearing the case out and hearing the interests of the father. So it's a very tragic outcome that just is years in the making to get to this point where we just see this young woman with mental health illness being saying, yes, it's okay that you kill yourself.
Yeah, and it seems insanely perverse that within our constitution, the very law that's and right that's supposed to protect life can actually be a part of the justification for taking it, which you know, has its own internal perversity there. But I'm glad that you laid kind of that legal trajectory of how things kind of came to pass. From your perspective, where do we go legally in Canada now that the genie has been let out of the bottle, now that supposed euthanasia is it's legal, it's constitutionally protected, it's certainly, you know, it's among now the leading causes of death in Canada year on year. What do we do as Canadians who are concerned about life from natural birth, from conception, fertilization to natural death, right? What should be our approach? How can concerned citizens really push back against this? You know, how do we wrap our heads around what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a tragic trajectory that we've been on, like I said, and just want to put out there, like, I feel so badly for the young woman in this case. Like, she is obviously in a place where she's viewing, you know, death as a preferable option to life. That's tragic. You know, it's also tragic for the father and the mother and all those involved. You know, in terms of what do we do now? What do we do here? Well, obviously, there's, you know, the law can be amended. You should be contacting your legislatures. There's both provincial and federal laws engaged in this course, in this case. There's the federal criminal code provisions around assisted suicide, and then there's provincial health policy. So be talking to both legislatures about this. If it's someone in your life who is in this position of wanting assisted suicide, this case does give us options to potentially fight this in the future. It does open a door and say there is a triable issue. So if you are in the position where something similar, where a loved one is wanting to go ahead with this, talk to a lawyer, see what your options are. The third, I think, is just language is a big one. Calling it what it is, I intentionally don't use the term medical assistance in dying. I call it what it is, which is assisted suicide. Because as a culture, we have long said that we want to prevent suicide. We have suicide prevention, you know, tools. That's what we need to be focusing on, is preventing it rather than assisting it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like to lean into my anti-abortion tendencies and call it doctor-assisted murder more than, because I think that's even more, whoa. Because some people would say, oh, there's a kind of dignified suicide. But no, it's legalized murder. I wanted to ask you a question. As someone who, you are in this legal judicial world, you swim in these waters. As I was reading the decision from the judge, there was almost this cognitive dissonance, this schizophrenia that existed in him. Because on the one hand, he's saying, I can't prevent you from doing what you're doing because it would be harmful if we did. But on the other hand, he's saying to the parents, this loss is immeasurable. I can't even imagine what you're feeling. And then he also said that he stayed his decision for 30 days, thinking that she might change her mind in that time, saying you don't have to kill yourself. So these elements where his humanity, right, the image of God in him is coming out, where he realizes maybe, you know, hopefully you don't kill yourself. Hopefully, you know, I imagine your parents are crushed by this. But at the same time, he says, but I have to allow it to happen. So with that in mind, with this almost kind of compromised, squishy, almost fatalistic attitude that he has, what does this say? What kind of assurance, what kind of confidence do we have in our judges, in our judiciary, where their position is they know what's right and wrong, right? The law of God on their hearts, they know, even if they can't articulate it, they know what's right, they know what's wrong, and they don't want to see this happen. And yet they have to concede, we must allow the evil to happen for whatever reasons they give. How does that bode for Canada and for Canadians that these are our judges, that they'll just fold over knowing what's right and wrong, knowing ultimately that they should stop it, but they feel helpless and they just have to let it happen?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, because the way the legal test works, right, they decide that there is a triable issue. There's an issue that should have a trial, right? We're at an interlocutory stage where we're at the beginning of a court case where they're saying, you know, can you have an injunction to stop something from happening while we develop these legal issues? So they're at that introductory stage. And he says there is something that should go to trial here. There is irreparable harm if this injunction is not granted. And it all comes down to that balancing stage. And it's a very clear contrast in the case, as the judge writes. He writes that, you know, his heart goes out to the father, that losing a child, you know, even an adult child, is an immeasurable loss. Like, it's a recognizing of that relational element, that, you know, what someone else's decisions do profoundly impact you. And I think this is one of the clearest examples that we could see of that. But in the very next paragraph, he goes, but autonomy of the person goes to the core of her being. So losing a child, that's important, that's immeasurable, but autonomy, individual choice, that's going to trump it here. And that's the trajectory of our law over the last, you know, 50 years, I would say, has gone more and more to that individual choice being idolized and being put above everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the other interesting point, just to your question there, is just the evidence in this case. The only party to put forward evidence was the father. So the judge had a lot of information on how this choice was going to impact the father, but had very little evidence about how this choice was going to impact the daughter. And I find that very interesting, that even at that balancing stage, again, saying that there's a tribal issue, at that balancing stage, even with the lack of evidence, he still weighed it in favor of the daughter's choice. And I find that very sad.
Yeah, it is truly tragic. And, you know, to steal a line from an organization you used to work with, ARPA Canada, we should be caring, not killing. And that's the real compassionate way to deal with, you know, a person in difficult life circumstances. It strikes me that this is inevitable, though, that kind of cognitive dissonance that you're talking about. When you change the core religion of a society and all law is predicated on authority, you cannot help but then see that play out in every institution. So you see it play out in medical institutions where they lesser the standards and the basic mottos, like first, do no harm. So that happens in the medical institutions. And then you see in law that all of a sudden a new principle of bodily autonomy, so-called, becomes the highest RK principle point that everything else in law must, you know, center around. But as I think you made clear, Tabitha, in your intro and kind of your perspective, is none of us human beings, though we're all individually created in the Imago Dei, none of us exist as isolated islands unto ourselves. We're all part of a community. And the fact of the matter is, we are ultimately not autonomous in the sense that God is the one who is the lawgiver and the judge, and we can only take life, including our own, as it is carefully spelled out in very limited circumstances in the law of God. And it's that law that used to be the law of our land. So the fact that we've changed that law has inevitably changed the outcomes in our society. And the part that strikes me is we were told that God's law is inhumane. It's uncompassionate. But now our new secular law order has young, relatively healthy females choosing to die rather than live, and then forcing taxpayers to participate in her death. It is truly astonishing. And we know from scripture that the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. And that's what you definitely see in this case. Tabitha, do you have anything, you know, any points to add before we wrap up with you? I know you probably have thought in and out of this case. You're a very astute mind. So I would love to just give you a moment to jump on anything I've said, or just give up some closing thoughts.
Yeah, I just pick up on the philosophical point. It's something I've thought a lot about over, especially the last few years, this idea of individual and community, because I think, naturally, the humans, we can only think in sort of two very distinct categories, which is, you know, radical autonomy or libertarianism, or we jump to collectivism or utilitarianism even. And I think the biblical idea that God gives us is this mystery, and it's this beautiful thing where we are created as individuals. We are individuals in the image of God, and we are created in community with other people. And I think, you know, this ultimately gets portrayed in the Trinity itself, which is three distinct persons, yet one. You know, they are distinct, they are one, they are not absorbed into each other. And, you know, God bringing us into relationship with him, not to absorb us and to, you know, diminish us, but to be in relationship with him. You know, it's a beautiful thing that I think is really difficult for our culture to wrap its mind around. But it's the truth that our culture so dearly needs right now.
Yeah, well said, well said.
Yeah. Tabitha, where can people follow you on social media? I know that you are commonly sharing, making rather poignant comments. What are your social media handles for X, Twitter? I don't know what you call it, but where can people be following you?
Yeah, I don't enjoy X or Twitter, unfortunately. So generally Facebook is where you can follow me. That's where I do most of my posting on these sort of topics. It's Tabitha Ewart. I accept most people as friends, assuming that you don't look like a bot. So that's probably your best place to learn more.
You wouldn't have a chance, Andrew. You've got bot written all over you.
I've bot written all over me. My big square head. Got bot written all over me.
Yeah.
Tabitha. Yeah. Always great to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us on The Dispatch. We really appreciate your insight and, again, helping our listeners to approach these topics from a sound biblical perspective. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again.
Born out of the desire to separate money from the state, Bitcoin epitomizes freedom money, an uncensorable network programmed around digital scarcity, where the individual is in full control and accountable for his own property. Bull Bitcoin, Canada's most trusted Bitcoin exchange since 2013, is a 100% self-funded company led and operated by incorruptible activists for individual liberties and freedom. At Bull Bitcoin, security and privacy are priority. Customers' funds are transferred directly to their Bitcoin wallet in their own possession. With Bull Bitcoin, you never run the risk of losing your money. You own the money. Sign up at mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC and get started with your account's creation today. Contact Bull's best in the business customer support team at any point to request assistance throughout the process. Take control of your money. mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC. It was great to be able to chat with Tabitha. I'm glad we could bring her on to talk about this issue. And I'm glad that our conversation with her was moving into the philosophical worldview issues that have led up to this and what this reveals about the horrid, decrepit face of progressivism and paganism and what that leads to. Because where we want to finish off our episode is showing you that this death cult, and this is what it is a thoroughly bloodlusting death cult, isn't just a Canadian thing. Nope. It's not just an American thing. The whole world, it would appear, is under this satanic spell. So similar to MV, the 27-year-old girl who is depressed with autism in Calgary, is another big story that's happening at the same time of Zoraya Ter Beek, a 28-year-old woman in the Netherlands who wants to legally kill herself this May. So this is within a month. She claims to suffer with depression and autism and borderline personality disorder. Now, this is from the Free Press. Listen to the despair in her voice and in the situation as people would have you believe it. Quote, Ter Beek, who lives in a little Dutch town near the German border, once had ambitions to become a psychiatrist, but she was never able to muster the will to finish school or start a career. She is tired of living, despite, she said, being in love with her boyfriend, a 40-year-old IT programmer, and living in a nice house with their two cats. She recalled her psychiatrist telling her that they had tried everything, that there's nothing more we can do for you. It's never going to get any better. At that point, she said she decided to die. She said, I was always very clear that if it doesn't get better, I can't do this anymore. So as if to advertise her hopelessness, Terbik has a tattoo of a tree of life on her upper left arm, but in reverse. This is what she says. Where the tree of life stands for growth and new beginnings, she texted, my tree is the opposite. It is losing its leaves. It is dying. And once the tree died, the bird flew out of it. I don't see it as my soul leaving, but more of myself being freed from life. She added this, the doctor really takes her time with regard to the doctor that's going to be murdering her. It's not that they walk in and say, lay down, please. Most of the time, it is first a cup of coffee to settle the nerves and create a soft atmosphere. Then she speaks if I'm ready. I will take my place on the couch. She will once again ask if I'm sure. She will start up the procedure and wish me a good journey. Or in my case, a nice nap. Because I hate if people say safe journey. I'm not going anywhere. She is going somewhere. That's what's very sad about this. She most definitely is going somewhere. Continuing, I'm seeing euthanasia as some sort of acceptable option brought to the table by physicians, by psychiatrists, when previously it was the ultimate last resort. Steph Groenwood, a healthcare ethicist at Theological University Kampen in the Netherlands, said, quote, I see the phenomenon especially in people with psychiatric diseases and especially young people with psychiatric disorders where the healthcare professional seems to give up on them more easily than before. Close quote. Theo Bohr, a healthcare ethics professor at Protestant Theological University in Groningen, served for a decade on a euthanasia review board in the Netherlands. He said, quote, I entered the review committee in 2005, and I was there until 2014, Bohr said. Quote, in those years, I saw the Dutch euthanasia practice evolve from death being a last resort to death being a default option, close quote. And he ultimately resigned from the review committee.
Are we surprised? There goes another slippery slope argument, right? I said this to somebody the other day. Oh, I think I posted it on X. It turns out a slippery slope argument isn't a slippery slope argument if the logic of the position infers its own natural end. That's just the logic working itself out, people. And that's what we've seen over and over and over again, and over and over and over again by mindless satanic activists. They've ignored everybody who's saying the trajectory of this position has one end, and that end is where we're going next.
But some people are not afraid anymore.
No.
Some people have no problem saying that now.
No, exactly. Exactly. But some of us said it before this happened, right? As though we were prophets crying out in the wilderness. Andrew, what's particularly astonishing is that people are now saying, as you've said, the quiet part out loud, right? People are now talking about what people like us have warned about for a long time. A few years ago, CBC broke a story showing that doctor-assisted suicide to the elderly would save millions of dollars by alleviating the healthcare system. That's evil. Just as evil, as this article from the Times in the UK titled, we can't afford a taboo on assisted dying. So here's the economic and medical health establishment justification for killing people when they're old. If assisted dying becomes a common and widely accepted, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, will consider choosing this road when the time comes, and in some cases even ask themselves whether it would be selfish not to. In short, a taboo will be lifted. What today is criminal, not in every jurisdiction, sadly, could tomorrow become a sad but permitted option in a relatively small number of special and agonizing circumstances. But within a decade or more, we have seen as a normal road for many, it's become a normal road for many to take and considered socially responsible and even finally urged upon people, which we're seeing in many jurisdictions who've gone down this road. Such, say objectors, is the wedge of which the Scottish proposal is just the thin end. Yes, but what's wrong with the thick end? The article asks. It'll be a healthy development. So here is somebody advocating for not euthanasia in difficult circumstances, but as that default option, like the one man in the Netherlands bemoaned. How are our economies going to pay for the ruinously expensive overhang that we dare not speak its name, old age and infirmity, the article continues. It may sound brutal, but I don't apologize for the reductivist tone in which this column treats human beings as units, in deficit or surplus to the collective. Self-preservation must shine a harsh beam onto the balance between input and output. To protect its future, a healthy society must adapt its norms, its cultural taboos, and its moral codes. Wow. How disgusting is that? Eugenics much? Unbelievable. But it doesn't end there. It goes on to say, I suspect and believe I notice that our culture is changing its mind, was said with glee, about the worth of old age when coupled with crippling degeneration, incapacity, indignity, and often suffering. Jeez, just the way he speaks of old age is certainly not the way the Bible speaks of it. If I'm right, our growing interest in assisted dying may reflect a largely unconscious realization that we simply cannot afford desperate infirmity for as many such individuals as our society is producing. Your time is up. We'll never be an order, but your time is up. Will never be an order. Are you sure? It's definitely happened. But yes, the objectors are right. May one day be the kind of unspoken hint that everybody understand, and that's a good thing. What a morally outrageous article to print. This is eugenics to its core, and you know, we can be thankful for the mask coming off, but whoever wrote this should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. We probably should have put it in the here so I had the name, but anyways, I mean, just unbelievable. Kill all the olds.
His what he's thinking, what he's saying, mm-hmm. which by the way, there are articles that he wrote, you know, as far back as 2016, 2015, espousing the same kind of nonsense, but. Mm-hmm. But obviously not as overt as this article.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is not a new belief.
No.
It's a very, very old belief, and not even old like 100 years old. It's the same kind of belief that allowed for or that created the kind of cultural understanding that babies who were born with some sort of deformity in the first century should be thrown into the garbage piles by Roman mm-hmm. citizens to be eaten by dogs.
Yeah.
Like this is not new. This is old thinking. What we're seeing, however, is our culture, which is continuing to separate itself from its biblical foundations, mm-hmm. continuing to, as it says, free itself from the shackles of Christian theocracy. Mm-hmm. And we just say the biblical principles that make for flourishing and life. As it continues to separate itself from these, it is it is becoming more and more committed to death and destruction. And so he can say this part out loud. And what he's, if you were listening to the words of this 28-year-old woman in the Netherlands, or even the way that the Justice Feasby was framing it for MV in Calgary, the fact that these young women believe that this is the only viable right option, that didn't come from nowhere. The fact that they believe that this is the right thing to do, or that it's the most preferred thing to do, is because this kind of worldview has been secretly growing underground, waiting for the moment to sprout out for everyone to see and accept. And that's where we are now.
Yeah.
Now it is broken ground and everyone is approving of it out loud, but it's been there for a very long time.
Yeah, it's always been of its father, the devil, right? Who's a liar and a murderer from the beginning. And now we just have societies, like I said, the cut flower societies that have so changed their most basic religious devotion that we now approve of it, broadly speaking. I was just thinking of the point about freedom. The fish that jumped out of the water said, "I'm free," until shortly thereafter he died. I mean, that's a parable of our society, right? Of where we're at. This is really difficult to talk about, because we're literally talking about human beings killing themselves, right? Like, there's theological and philosophical points that we need to make. We need to do this news and analysis, but this is a different news story than a lot of what we talk about, because this is getting at the very core of what it means to be Imago Dei, of life and death. And I can't help but say to our audience, look at the results, people. When we say it's Christ or chaos, you might bristle against that binary option, but it's an inevitable option. If it's is it theonomy or autonomy? It's an inevitable option. And which produces what? Be smart enough to be Dawkins to at least admit it. And then maybe pursue that which brings to life and flourishing. You know, are we going to, at what point in a society, are we going to actually take a step back and say, this promised secular utopia that we were told about, it was just right around the corner. It turns out it's a hellish deathscape.
Yeah.
Like, it kills people. Like, we were told the 20th century was supposed to be, this is where progressivism birthed itself, was supposed to be the unstoppable age of progress. What was it? It was the century of mass death and the age of deathly, crazy, evil ideologies that sprung up in old directions from their satanic root, which is autonomy. It's man's autonomous thought.
And it creates not only systems, so it doesn't just create systems or legislation. It doesn't create laws from the top down that lead to this kind of evil. It also works its way from the bottom up.
Oh,
in the way people perceive life. Like, we look at the words of this 28-year-old woman from the Netherlands as she herself describes her situation. Here you have someone who's 28 years old, who's living with her 40-year-old boyfriend. He's an IT programmer. They have a nice house and they have two cats.
Which is more than a lot of people.
But I'm looking at this situation. Again, there's a little bit of speculation, because I don't know her heart. I don't know the situation with her parents growing up. But my guess, like if I had to make a guess, if I was forced to hypothesize, I would imagine that this woman was not raised in a home with a family that said, for example, yes, there are some real physiological or psychological issues that are going to be a challenge for you, dear daughter, but we are committed not only to loving and supporting you so that you can work through them, because we believe that as a child made in God's image, we're responsible for you and we're committed to your growth and to your well-being, but we will also train and teach you to embrace God's standards for your life and not the world's standards for your life. Mm-hmm. Now, why do I say that probably wasn't the case? Because if she's able to live with her boyfriend and have two cats in a nice house, then why isn't she able to marry him? So marriage abandoned. That's mm-hmm. not kids abandoned. Who needs
the things
kids
that give us
who
meaning.
Needs marriage? Who needs kids? Who needs marriage? Gone out of the picture. Right. So behold the fruit of that. Yeah. Behold the fruit. Because if she's thinking, no, we are committed to one another in covenantal marriage and we will have children and we will raise them up also mm-hmm. in the discipline and instruction of the Lord.
I have work to do. I'm his yeah. helpmeet. I have work to do.
Yeah. I've abandoned. yeah. God's order has been abandoned. But look, she's tired of living. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a worldview. There's a worldview thing that's been communicated to her. And the idea that it doesn't get better, I can't do this anymore, the whole inverted tree of life reality.
At least that, she understands that, the spiritual nature of what's going on.
That one line where she says, I hate when people say good journey because I'm not going anywhere. She is going somewhere. Mm-hmm. She's going somewhere where the fire is never quenched, where the moaning and the wailing never ceases. Mm-hmm. Where the gritting and gnashing of teeth is unending mm-hmm. unless she turns to Christ. That's exact. But in her mind, in her worldview, this is it. You mm-hmm. die. There's nothing beyond here. So then why would I prolong any suffering? Mm-hmm. Theology of suffering that's lacking. Why would I prolong yeah. suffering? Why would I prolong difficulty mm-hmm. when I can just end it now, not thinking that the 80 years of life I will live here, even though it's full of suffering, is followed by an eternity of glory and sinless, painless, deathless, mm-hmm. eternal. All of that's abandoned. Mm-hmm. And so the discarding of the Christian worldview doesn't just mean we have corrupt politicians, corrupt lawmakers, a broken judicial system, a broken healthcare system, a corrupt media. We have all those. But what it looks like on the ground is people who have thoroughly abandoned God's standard. And mm-hmm. the result is what? Hopelessness and the embracing of death as being the best answer. Mm-hmm. This worldview, this thinking is so destructive on the ground in the lives of individual people. And parents, if you are parents, see here the importance of the mm-hmm. inculcation of a Christian worldview in the lives of your children to think differently about meaning and purpose and joy and suffering and marriage and relationships and eternity. What you pass off to your children. Listen, like if you have young kids, what you pass off to your children will determine whether or not they kill themselves
yeah.
when they're
yeah.
28. Here is the proof yeah, of that. Yeah.
And that's we're witnessing a suicidal culture with a death wish, profoundly. With a death wish. And I know, pardon me, I know the Free Press article. Sorry, I'll do that again. I'll just stay on this. And I know the Free Press article was written by Rupa Sharma Maria. I can never get her.
Subramanya.
Sorry. Without it in front of me. Subramanya. Sorry. It's hard for me to get right. But Rupa, I'm glad again that you recognize the issue here. You can diagnose that there's a problem, but you know, Rupa's also one who's come out very much against Christianity, very much promoting Hinduism as a peace-loving religion that has great solutions for what ails man. But nothing could be further from the truth. And Rupa's, you know, she might not have enough sense to be like Dawkins and understand that she's been so shaped by the Christian ethos, even in a dying post-Christian age, that she doesn't understand that Hinduism, others, people, Hinduism has no concept of the Imago Dei. Hinduism really doesn't have a doctrine of suffering in the way that Christianity has. Hinduism doesn't even provide a good telos for humanity. It's so devoid of so many necessary things that would prevent this culture of death, because it's also ultimately a satanic religion as well. And it is also it is also extremely violent. It's amazing that she's criticizing Christians for being extremely violent throughout history, when right now there's all sorts of insane religious wars going on in India, and Hinduism is right at the heart of a lot of that persecution and everything. But that was kind of an aside. But what we're getting at is notice secularism is not only a death cult, but it cannot provide answers. It's Christ or chaos. Rupa doesn't have the answer. She can only make a diagnosis. I'm reading.
The reality is, even if you, so as long as you've been a good person and have tried to love and care for others, if the reason you're ending your life is because you don't want to go through suffering, and you also understand that those who love you will also have to witness the suffering, that in her worldview, wouldn't it be the case that ending your life prematurely is the moral thing to do and therefore moves you up in the caste system in your next reiteration of reincarnation? Like, she would, she should be supportive of this,
yeah,
right? But inconsistency comes through because the image of God bleeds through her, and she deep in her heart, she knows something's wrong about this, but she can't put it together to understand that she should actually be supporting this with her worldview.
Yeah,
she should be all for this.
Exactly. And but it's amazing to me, Andrew, because we're starting to see, like, I think Dawkins, Super Maria, Abigail Schreier's another one, right? She wrote Irreversible Damage.
Joe Rogan recently.
Joe Rogan. Yeah,
comments made about Jesus.
Yeah, Schreier, back to her, wrote Irreversible Damage, her new book, Bad Therapy. She sounds exactly like biblical counselors arguing against secular psychological treatments. She sounds exactly like them in diagnosing the absolute and utter failure of man assessing the proper mental state with only reference to man. Homo mensura, man as the measure, is the ultimate failure. The question is theonomy or autonomy. Autonomy leads to death. Theonomy, under the rule and lordship of Christ, leads to life eternal and flourishing. And right now, we just have to ask, which way, Western man and woman, which way will you choose? There is no other option. Stop playing around with it. Stop flirting around with it. Have you not seen that binary, as the Bible lays out, is true? Pick today. Because it is a matter of life and death.
And so someone might be thinking, how is it that autonomy leads to death? I don't necessarily see it. And I just want to trace that. I want to trace that line for people to see.
Absolutely.
Autonomy leads to tyranny, right? So autonomy always leads to the tyrant of the self. Mm-hmm. This is the myth. This is the misconception about autonomy. That autonomy is, if I make my own decisions and you make your own decisions and we're our own gods, then that means that we'll live in peace. But the problem is, autonomy leads to the tyranny of the self, because someone needs to define what's right and wrong, and someone needs to be master. And for the autonomous libertarian, when you bring it down to its most irreducibly complex level, ultimately you become the arbiter of what is right and wrong. Therefore, you're the master. Therefore, you're the tyrant. So you actually become a slave to your own desires and your own wishes and your own morality, which means you now have become the tyrant in your own life. And wherever tyranny abounds, death is sure to follow, which is why Christ as king is the only system that brings life. because mm-hmm. he's the only ruler who isn't and will never become a tyrant.
And but he can set you free.
Yeah, the tyranny of self is what leads to death. I want to get a little tiny bit personal. I don't often talk in any detail about family stuff, but I want to get a little bit personal because this touches
well, this,
down.
This is this whole situation. It's got to strike personally for you, right? Yeah. Because you're not aloof to it.
Yeah. So I want to get a little bit personal, and then I want to close off with something from the scriptures that I think helps us understand as we were addressing with Tabitha a little bit what's going on a worldview level. So without getting into too much detail, my wife and I have been very disturbed by these stories about this girl in Calgary, about this case in the Netherlands, about this article from the Times. So our oldest son is on the autism spectrum, and we've known it for several years now. He's 11. He's almost 12. We've known it since he was about 4 or 5. My wife, prior to getting married, did her master's in child psych. She did a degree in child psych. She got her master's in disability studies and spent extensive time working privately at home and with students in schools who had autism, helping them, supporting them, doing therapy with them. So quite experienced in this. So we noticed some tendencies in our son, and we have him assessed, and it confirms what she believes to be true. And so instantly we have to wrestle with the fact that there will be hurdles and there will be difficulties from a young age all throughout his life that will be there that don't make it that his life is impossible and unlivable, but make it so that he will have to overcome these things and learn to wrestle with and respond to instincts and impulses that the regular person doesn't necessarily have to. But we committed ourselves early on for various reasons. One, that we did not want to put him on any kind of medication, not because we are opposed to medicine in general, but because we understood that because he was so young, because his brain's still developing, and because I really, really like my son, and the parts about his personality that I quite enjoy would be muted with the medication. And I didn't want to do that because there are things I treasure about him that would be subdued if he was on medication. So what's the answer? So the answer for us became a rather intense, cost-burdensome decision to have a very stringent and focused diet for him, avoiding certain foods and certain items. So this was part of the decision that led us to homeschooling initially, which puts a weight in general, but especially when you have one child with a mental neurological disability, that's an added burden. Decisions with how we would do screens, how we would understand, and by do screens, let's cut them out, with activity, physical activity, all these decisions we've had to structure our family with two other younger children at the time and now two small twins. So it's not just him, it's five children as we navigate this, which has been a tremendous effort on our behalf, a lot of work, a lot of intentionality, but it's worth it. And to say that because of this issue, which is an issue that affects people and will affect them for their whole lives, but to say that this is a reason that someone must kill themselves is so ghoulish. It's so gross. And it's so much of a lie. It is a lie to say that this must necessarily lead to this. Because yes, there have been moments of difficulty in the life of my son. And yes, there will be moments of difficulty in the life of my son. But I'm certain, because we love the Lord and because we love him and because we are committed to raising him up the way that God would have us, I'm totally hopeful. So my son loves the Lord, and my son is committed to following Jesus, serving him in our church, and committed to reading his Bible and communicating the truth of God to others, which is incredibly joyful. But I'm completely hopeful that my son will marry a wonderful, godly woman, that he will be able to provide for her, that they will hopefully bring me 7 to 10 children, just them alone, grandchildren. That's what I'm banking for. We'll see how early we can get him married. That he will be a faithful contributing member to whatever church he's at, that he will be involved with the building of God's kingdom, and that for as long as he lives, he will be faithfully serving Christ, caring for his family, and hopefully being able to leave a legacy that we were able to begin in our family long after we're gone for his kids and his grandkids. And I'm hopeful for that. I'm not just thinking, oh, maybe. No. It's in my mind, it's going to happen. And the reason it's going to happen is because we know God, we know how he works, and because we made a decision that we would not allow this to define him, and nor would we allow this to hinder him from everything that he could do, because this issue actually makes it so that in many ways he is wonderful and beautiful and excels, and there are strengths that mm-hmm. come out of this that we appreciate. Yeah. So that, again, parents, mm-hmm. the way that we understand God's grace, God's design of people, God's design for life and for humanity and for flourishing, and the way we teach and train our children is the difference between, quite literally, life and death. Mm-hmm. And the scriptures have a word for that. The word is wisdom. Mm-hmm. The word is taking the truth, the knowledge bits truth of reality, and applying it and aligning our lives and what we know to be true around God's word and God's design. That's being wise. Mm-hmm. And it's no surprise that the scriptures tell us that wisdom leads to life. This is Proverbs 8, 32 to 36. So this is wisdom speaking, which ultimately wisdom personified is God, and he has revealed his wisdom through his word. So mm-hmm. this is the person of God. This is the word of God speaking, personified in wisdom. And now, O sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not neglect it. This, by the way, is how we need to raise our children, right? Keep God's ways, obey his commands, be wise, don't mm-hmm. neglect it. It's good for you. Blessed is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my doors. For whoever finds me, this is God, this is his word, this is wisdom. Whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me, this is wisdom, this is God, this is his word, all who hate me love death.
Mm-hmm. There you have it. That is the problem with our culture, is it hates God and his Christ. And the question remains, which today will you choose, Christ or chaos? Life eternal or death everlasting? And that is a serious, serious question of great sobriety. I am just, before we close up, I'm just led with the fact that, autonomy not only leads to death, it's also deadly in its delusion. And I say that in cases of medical assistance in dying, because you actually aren't autonomous, because I don't know if you noticed it, but not everybody can apply for MAID in our country. Even MV had to apply to a panel of morally corrupt physicians to die. You don't have autonomy to die via MAID in our society. So if you think it's an argument for bodily autonomy, think again. You don't have it. All you are giving is the government and its proxies the power to decide who deserves to live and die within a society. And right now, what we're seeing in Calgary is setting a precedent in law in Canada that people like your son, Andrew, because of the neurological condition that they were born with, deserve to die because of something that they can't change. Is that a society that you want to live in? Not I. I'm somebody like your wife. I've worked with many people with mental and physical disabilities, and you get to see such unique displays of the image of God in people with some of those challenges, and to see the faith that is there in so many of them, even in the midst of, you know, the most difficult of circumstances, is something truly amazing to behold. And it certainly points us to the fact that in so many people that I've experienced who are Christians with all these difficult circumstances, they still have exceeding joy. They look forward to their reward. I think of a dear friend of mine, Janine, who's gone to be home with the Lord. She couldn't walk, had massive strokes, brain tumors. She would talk to me in her broken voice, as best as you could understand, about the joy of running with Jesus. And how truly beautiful that picture is. And it just points to the fact that what Christ says is right. If the eye is darkness, everything else is darkness. And what he's trying to say is worldview matters. The way that you look at the world matters. Mm-hmm. If you see everything through the prism of darkness, everything is swallowed up by darkness. But if you look at it through the light of God's word, you can put even the most difficult of suffering, which is punctuated by Christ's suffering on the cross, in the right perspective of all of life and eternity. And if we do that, we understand that though we walk through this veil of tears, that it is just but a small punctuation in eternity if we are born again in the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's what we call you today, to decide which you will choose this day, life or death, Christ or chaos. Until next time, Galatians 5:1.
Liberty Dispatch has been brought to you in partnership with Liberty Coalition Canada and Christian Week, and has been produced by SDG Media. You can find all things Liberty Coalition Canada at libertycoalitioncanada.com.